Everybody, today is Saturday, September 13th, 2025. Our friend Larry Johnson is back with us, but not, he's not in Florida. Where are you, Larry, right now?
I'm hiding out in Texas. You know, sorry. Still brought the shirt with me. We're still doing the shirt competition. It's becoming a thing. We got Doug. We got the Colonel Wilkerson wearing the shirt. We got Garland Nixon wearing the shirt. You know, you're the
Paul Kerrig Roberts.
Yeah, very true. No, it's yeah. Hilarious. Yeah. So yeah, I'm in Texas. A friend of mine is celebrating his 70th birthday, so I came here to participate in the celebration. He's a youngster compared to me.
You're youngster as well.
Yeah. Well preserved with alcohol, I guess.
Larry, let's start with the case of Charlie Kirk. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump came out right after the attack. He said that this is the left, this is the far left attacking Charlie Kirk. And he's in the aftermath of somehow finding the guy who assassinated Charlie Kirk. Here is what Donald Trump said. He was asked the same question on Fox News.
The question was that he was radical left. And now you have more information. What can you share with us about his ideology?
Yeah, Lawrence, let me just, and by the way, Lawrence is doing a good job. What's going on?
Fantastic job, yeah.
I'll tell you what, I'm very proud of you.
Thank you, sir.
I said you were going to do well. Yeah, I think that I don't want to go too far. I'd like to tell you some stories at how it happened, but essentially somebody that was very close to him turned him in. And that happens when you had some of those good shots. Somebody is going to say, whether it's a parent or whatever, I'd rather not say right now. They're going to announce it today, sometime later, probably talk about that. But somebody close to him turned him in. You know, they said, whoa. It's interesting. We had very good pictures, but not great, not perfect. And when you look at it, what happened is somebody, and this happens a lot. It happened with the crazy Boston.
I think that's enough. He didn't answer the question that he was asked. He was somehow missing the answer. What's your understanding on that, Larry?
You mean the understanding of?
Yeah, why does he need? Because if it was the radical left, he would lash them during the interview that we found him, he's connected with the radical left. This is the, but he didn't go in that direction. It's something different.
When that interview took place, he may have not had the information that's now out there. It is one possibility. There's still going to be a lot of controversy surrounding this because people claim, and I've watched the video of when Tyler Robinson's retreating from the scene, you don't see a big rifle in his hands. You do see something that's in a green towel that could be a rifle. There are questions about, was he actually able to, if he didn't carry the rifle away from there, then where did he leave it? The news I just saw, before coming on air with you, that, here's a Mormon kid, and anybody knows anything about the Mormons, they're usually very conservative, but he was living with a transgender partner, and so this, the whole notion that this was part of an effort to silence Charlie Kirk because of his views, strong anti-transgender views, remains a viable hypothesis. But there's also those suggesting that it was because Charlie was appraising his position vis-a-vis Israel. The Max Blumenthal and Anya Parampil, Max's wife, I put out a very interesting article at the Grayson, in which they're quoting
you
somebody.
You mean this,
who knew.
Larry? This yeah. one?
Yes, yes. One of Charlie's close associates said that Kirk refused this Netanyahu funding offer and was frightened by the pro-Zionist. I think it's probably better called pro-Zionist as opposed to pro-Israel. And Charlie. there are some that go back and say, oh, well, he was just a diehard Zionist. You know, he defended Israel over October 7th. He had made public comments suggesting that he bought into the lies about the beheading of babies by Hamas, which did not happen. But what we saw in July 13th, and it's a point I've made on other videos, that at the Turning Point Conference, he hosted a debate featuring Dave Smith, a Jewish comedian who is strongly anti-Zionist and a very stout critic of Israel and his current genocidal policies, against Josh Hammer, who is an ultra-Zionist journalist. I think he runs U.S. News and World Report or Newsweek, one of those. But and Charlie did a pretty even-handed job of moderating it. It would have appeared that someone could say that he was favoring Israel in the debate. But the important thing is the audience reaction at that debate was very strongly supporting the position of Dave Smith. And, you know, there's no doubt in anybody's mind that for people 40 and under, the stalwart automatic support for Israel has gone out the window. It's no longer the case. And here's Charlie Kirk, to his credit, creating a remarkable political movement that is bringing in kids 21, 20, 18 years of age. Now, of course, not all of them. If you look at Tyler Robinson, who killed him? He didn't persuade him. I'm not saying I was not a fanboy of Kirk by any stretch, but I did watch and admire his ability to engage people of different points of view. He always did it without attacking the individual as a person, without using any kind of ad hominem attacks or slurs. Didn't call into question their mother's past sexual behavior. This engaging through dialogue, he was genuine about it. And so that, and you know what? I think that's what made him such a threat, that all of these radicals who have been cheering his death and celebrating it, as much as you may not like someone, if you look at how they talk, how they conduct themselves, I never saw him in any kind of exchange with students be mean, demeaning, or vindictive. So that tells you something about the person, that because he's 31 years old. Look, he's what, 10, 12 years younger than you. Yeah. And I would venture to say you may have changed a few of your views over the last 10, 11 years.
Many.
And yeah. And so he wasn't, Charlie Kirk was not, he's not like some prehistoric bug frozen in amber, that he's in a permanent state of just one kind of rigid intellectual belief. He was actually quite flexible about it. And, the one thing where he wasn't flexible, but I applaud him on it, was the whole issue of the right to life. And it's a very simple premise, but I think it's also very profound. If you are take the position that it's okay and it's easy to kill an unborn child simply because you call them an embryo, or just a mass collection of cells, that you don't acknowledge that an unborn child is in fact a human being, is part of the process of becoming a human being. And so from Charlie's standpoint, again, drawing out on his religious faith, that killing these children is a way of dehumanizing ourselves. And, I don't think it's any grand coincidence that Margaret Sanger, who was really one of the biggest proponents of abortion and a eugenicist, one who believed in the superiority of certain genetics over black people, for example, was embraced by the Nazis, and the leading physicians in the Nazis studied her and collaborated with her. Well, you know, we know the horror that that ended up creating.
Larry, we know that he supported Israel. He said that Israel has the right to fight back and all of this. He did a lot of talks and supporting Israel. But on the other hand, he was somehow, he wasn't that much rigid in the way of thinking. He was, as you mentioned, he was so flexible. When he hears something different that contradicts what he believes, he thinks of it and he may find something different out of this sort of contradiction. But what has happened during, I think one of the main, you know, let's put it this way, the foundation of what's going on in Palestine is the October 7th. And he came out on a podcast talking about October 7th and talking without Israelis being informed and knowing about that day that could have never happened. And here is what he said, Larry.
Times, the whole country's a fortress. When I first heard this story, I still had the same gut instinct that I did initially. I find this very hard to believe. I've been to that Gaza border. You cannot go 10 feet without running into a 19-year-old with an AR-15 or an automatic machine gun that is an IDF soldier, right? The whole country is surveilled. And so let me just kind of go through this. We don't talk about Israeli politics very often, and most Americans don't know this. The last 9 months, Israel was on the brink of civil war. It's not an exaggeration. This judicial stuff, there were hundreds of thousands of Israelis taking to the streets because Bibi Netanyahu was basically redefining the Israeli constitution. That's not an exaggeration, right? He said the judicial branch has too much power. There were protests planned this week against Netanyahu where they anticipated tens of thousands of people to take to the streets. That's all gone, Patrick. Netanyahu now has an emergency government and a mandate to lead. I'm not willing to say, to go so far that saying that Netanyahu knew or there was intelligence here. But I think some questions need to be asked. Was there a stand down order? Was there a stand down order? 6 hours? I don't believe it. Israel's the size of New Jersey. When I took a helicopter ride from Jerusalem to the Gaza border, it's 45 minutes. Wow. 6 hours. They're live streaming the killing of Jews. Did somebody in the government say stand down? That is a legitimate non-conspiracy question. The whole country is the IDF. The whole country is.
Yeah.
And you're trying to tell me that they're going to concerts and kibbutzes and schools and by report.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He definitely was not a fan of Netanyahu. Netanyahu coming out and saying that he was the best friend of Israel. That's why they is Islamists and those people who radical Islamists killed him because of that. And I don't see that. I don't see really what Netanyahu is telling us is literally a big lie. Go ahead.
Well, it also goes back to, let's say, the human life issue. Because when you're an advocate like Charlie Kirk was for the unborn, for children to be born, then naturally, once you start seeing the images of these children being murdered by the Israelis, we're not talking one or two or isolation. We're talking a steady campaign to exterminate the Palestinian people. I think that started to weigh on Charlie's conscience. And that I think he was genuinely in the process of shifting his position, which, you know, I don't think you can rule out the possibility of saying, did the Zionists have him killed? You know, did they work in some way with this Tyler Robinson to encourage him to act, to make it possible for him to act? Because they recognized that Charlie Kirk, in the direction he's headed, was going to eventually wind up at a point where they'd be advocating to end all support for Israel, which, anyway, I think that's where we're headed. Because we saw this last week that even Donald Trump, as much of a Zionist enabler as he has been, that he directed the State Department through the U.S. ambassador to the U.N. to vote in favor of the resolution that condemned Israel's attack on Qatar. Not it didn't condemn Israel by name, but you know, everybody knew who they were talking about. You know, it wasn't some great mystery. So, you know, the worm on this is starting to churn, and this this death of you know, Charlie Kirk may end up being also a blessing in disguise in terms of finally being helping bring a breaking point where more Americans are going to say to Israel, no, we're no longer going to participate in your genocide. We're no longer going to enable your murder of others. So I think what we were witnessing was Charlie Kirk was not a rigid ideologue. Yeah. Or you could say that he was very firm in his belief about protecting the lives of the unborn children, protecting children in general, whether it's from sexual predators or from violence or from poverty. Those are two things that out of his Christian faith, he put a high priority on. So, hopefully what comes out of this tragedy is a renewed commitment to those values by the people that followed him.
It wasn't just about Israel, Larry. He had different idea on the case of whole Middle East, because I don't know if you've heard that Tucker Carlson was talking about him going to White House talking with Donald Trump about Iran on Megyn Kelly show. Here is what Tucker Carlson said, Larry.
I mean, truly one of the only people to go to the president whom he loved. He loved Donald Trump, like personally, yep, as well. And I think the president really loved him in a real way. But he was one of the only people to go to the Oval Office and say, sir, I totally understand and think Iran's really bad, but a war with Iran is not, you know, is something that could really hurt our country. I mean, boy, that was an unpopular position. He didn't need to express it. Oh, of course. And he did it again. He didn't have some weird agenda. He wasn't mad at anybody. He was for his country and he was for doing the right and wise and difficult thing. And he said that. He went to the Oval Office to say that. He took massive, massive abuse from his own donors, which is also something that you don't see people. And he loved his donors. It wasn't a hostile thing, but they had a different view. A lot of them, not all, but a lot. And they expressed it to him in a very intense way. I know because he showed me. And he said, look, I understand your perspective. This is my perspective. And we're going to do what we think is the right thing, the wise thing.
In that way.
You see the foundation of MAGA. This guy is literally the representation of the foundation of MAGA. It's America first again. He's not interested in going to war on behalf of Israel or anybody else. That's why he's asking Donald Trump not to go and attack Iran because of that. What's your understanding of that? And how much of the threat was that to the establishment, to those people who are running the show?
I think it was, Charlie Kirk, by virtue of the direction he was headed, represented a tremendous threat, which is why you can't rule out that his position with regards to uncritical support for Israel, going against that position, put him at risk, made him a target, to where efforts may have been taken to actively promote. You know, I'm not suggesting that Mossad directly targeted Charlie, but I also know there are things the intelligence agency can do to try to incite third parties like Tyler Robinson to act where they think that they're acting on their own behalf, but they've been fed a line, they've been fed information deliberately designed to provoke and to inflame the situation. I saw elements of this when I worked with the Central Intelligence Agency 40 years ago, there were ways that you could feed information to somebody where they were unwitting that it was coming from the CIA. And they think it was coming from some other source. And then based on that information, they take action. So in this, but what Charlie was doing, and as Tucker acknowledged, once he took this position, the donors, Jewish donors, or let's better yet call them Zionist donors, came out and started applying pressure on him. You know, how dare you? That, you know, what Trump has, Trump's a bit of a quandary because he is beholden to the Zionist money, but his base is holding him to account for being America first. You can't be America first where you put the priorities of Israel above those of the Americans. Can't be done. And, you know, we saw sort of a glimmer of a movement in the right direction this past week when the U.S. State Department directed the U.S. representative to the U.N. to support the resolution condemning Israel's attack on Qatar. Good move.
Yeah. Larry, we've learned that Ben Shapiro may take over the organization that he was running, Charlie Kirk was running. And they're literally replacing him with someone totally different. That is totally,
not just totally different. Let's understand when Turning Point USA started, who was working closely with Charlie Kirk in starting TPUSA? Do you know what her name was?
No.
Candace Owens.
Yeah.
Candace Owens was traveling with Charlie in those early days. She was sort of like the big sister to, you know, he was her little brother. Well, remember what happened to Candace Owens? She was fired, right? She was fired from the organization run by who? Or has a heavy influence in it? Ben Shapiro. So Candace knows that Ben Shapiro is a toxic cancer. And Candace, in terms of her relationship with Erica, and I think her relationship with other members of TPUSA, Talking Point, Turning Point USA, I think involving Ben Shapiro in this would be a dagger to the heart. Shapiro is a toxic Zionist. Now, I don't think he should be killed. I don't think there should be any violence directed against him. I think he should be shunned. I think he should be ignored. But, you know, we've got to overcome this where, you know, people want to use violence against those they disagree with. I strongly disagree with Ben Shapiro and his racist view of the Palestinians. It's unfortunate. I would argue that at least he is intellectually consistent because he's one of those Zionists who actually believes in God and buys the whole God gave us this land story. Okay. The thing I don't have any understanding of are the Zionists who the entire premise of Zionism is based upon God, this eternal being, gave this land to us and we're special. But they don't believe in God. So if you're an atheist and you don't believe in God, you really can't be a Zionist. All you are just a robber of land. That's all you are. Because you at least someone like a Shapiro, he links it to his religious belief. As twisted and wrong as that belief is, it might be. But at least he's consistent on that front.
Larry, do you feel that the MAGA movement is somehow, I don't know, weakening or dying from within? What is happening to MAGA?
Well, it's not dying, but it's not under the domination and control of Donald Trump anymore. Donald Trump made a fatal error in vowing action on Jeffrey Epstein and then comes in and attacks as if it's a Democratic hoax, refusing to acknowledge that there are a number of women who have legitimate claims and complaints that are not being addressed. So this is something that's unfortunately Trump has picked a fight with his base. And that's where he lost Candace Owens. You know, Candace was a very strong supporter of Trump. I think Charlie Kirk, to an extent, he was starting to recognize, you know, he liked Trump, but some of the positions that Trump was taking were in complete contradiction to his America First agenda. And Charlie was all about America First, and in that promoting, you know, what we call strong, his, you know, we call them Christian values. So the number one value is the importance of human life, whether it's gestating in the womb of a woman or it's an 84-year-old with terminal cancer. That these are all people who are made in the image of God within that theological construct. And therefore, life is precious, that you don't want to just wantonly or easily destroy it. And, you know, looking back, I think if you had to make a prediction about where Charlie Kirk would have been at the end of his life, and he lived to be 80, 90 years old, I think that one point about the sanctity of human life, I don't think he would have ever changed that. I think when you get right down to it, that's a core belief. And you know, it's one of the reasons why you lose that belief about human beings being, you know, connected with the divine. And when instead you can characterize them basically as insects, subhuman, then it's easy to destroy them. It's easy to kill them. It's easy to watch these children die. You know, it's good that there's an outpouring of grief surrounding the death of Charlie Kirk. But that same kind of death is being repeated on a daily basis in Gaza and to a lesser extent in the West Bank. And we don't see the world mourning those people because it's not covered by news. They're not known to us. But, you know, if you take Charlie's theological position, he'd insist they are known to God. And that, you know, within Charlie's world, the death of one Palestinian child is just as important as the death of some prominent, you know, social organizer like Charlie Kirk. No difference. Shouldn't be.
Yeah. We had Bernie Sanders yesterday coming out condemning what has happened. And he confessed during his message, he said Charlie Kirk was so much capable of bringing a lot of people out. And huge crowds. He mentioned that during his message. It shows how important his character was, considering he was so young, 31. It's nothing.
Right. Right. Yeah.
He had a huge opportunity to be the next president of the United States, in my opinion.
Yeah. No, I think he was creating a political movement that actually, if you will, was a threat to the established order, both the Republican and Democrat side. Let's not forget that. It's not just Democrats and leftists. I don't like these terms, left and right, liberal, conservative. So let's start boiling it down to some basic principles. But do you believe that individuals should have the right to choose? You know, I do. I think that's one of the most important human rights. Do you believe that human life should be preserved as opposed to destroyed? Yeah. You know, I can see someone who is anti-abortion, pro-life, also arguing that they're against the death penalty, or acknowledge that meting out death to someone should be only included in cases where an individual has established themselves as, you know, completely committed to just death and destruction of others. Well, you know, like in the case of Charlie Kirk, there was nothing in his rhetoric or in his public comments where he was advocating causing harm to other people. You know, and I think that ought to be the standard. In your speech, in your writings, are you advocating policies and actions that inflict pain, suffering on other people, then, you know, that's something that should be opposed. Or to the contrary, are you advocating policies, procedures, actions that are going to minimize the amount of human suffering? So.
what has happened in the United States. You've mentioned in one of the pieces that you wrote on sonar21.com that how the situation with the with the case of Charlie Kirk is shadowing, overshadowing the foreign policy, what's going on outside of the United States, which was the attack on Qatar. Yeah. And the situation in with Russia. How, Larry, when you look at the situation with Qatar right now, and how do you feel about it? Do you think that Donald Trump understands or has understood the gravity of what has happened in the Middle East?
Yeah, I think to an extent. The attack, number one, I am sure that Donald Trump was briefed and knew about the Israeli plan to try to kill the Hamas negotiators in Qatar, in Doha. And he was assured that it'd come off without a hitch and this, they'd kill him and then the pathway would be open and he could negotiate, you know, finally get the negotiated settlement he's been striving to get. Well, but it didn't happen that way. You saw the you saw the Trump administration immediately do two things. They backpedaled, we only found out about it at the last minute. We didn't know anything about it. Nonsense. To fly into that airspace, you're flying over Al-Udeid Air Force Base. There is radar, there is forward elements of U.S. Central Command. This entire thing, it's monitored 100%. So, and there's no way the Israelis would have risked flying in there like that without prior coordination with the United States, because the United States might have said, hey, this is an attack from someone else, and they would have shot it down. So, you know, you've got that. Trump knew about it, but when it failed, then they came out and tried to push the story. Oh, we don't know nothing about that. But what is important is when the UN debated this, the United States sided with China and with India and with Russia and other countries, France, the UK, in condemning Israel's actions. So that's a movement in the right direction.
The head of Iranian Security Council is talking with all of the Arab states in the region, in the West Asia, to bring, I don't know, they want to make some sort of coalition, they want some sort of council to deal with this attitude of Israelis attacking each and every country at their will. Whenever they want to attack them, they attack them. It doesn't matter which country is that. It's not about Iran. Iran is the worst enemy of Israel in the Middle East, as they say it. But Qatar, Saudi Arabia, it could be in Bahrain, it could be in other countries. And do you feel that this attack has somehow changed the mindset of those people, those leaders in Arab states, which were so much, because they were, they trust, at least I think right now as we talk, they trust the United States, but I don't know how much damage the Israeli attack has caused.
Actually, I don't think they have a high level of trust for the United States. I think it's just the opposite. They've witnessed what has been done, and that, you know, here was Qatar hosting, harboring Hamas officials at the request of the United States with the full knowledge of Israel, and Israel had not said a thing or opposed it. In fact, there is evidence that Israel was actually getting money and doing, that there were nefarious activities going on between Bibi Netanyahu and the Hamas leadership. So this attack was seen as something the United States should have prevented, could have stopped, and didn't. So it's causing those countries, naturally, Saudi Arabia in particular, to take a step back and look and say, okay, what the hell? Can we trust these people? No, you can't. Can't trust us. That's the lesson that should be learned. Whether they'll learn it or not, whole other question.
The attack, by the way, failed, totally failed, because they couldn't kill those people who wanted to kill. And looking at Larry, the latest two attacks that on the part of Israelis, one of them was on the Yemeni prime minister together with his cabinet members, which they succeeded to assassinate all of them. And that didn't bring any sort of change to what's going on.
Well, again, look at the ones they're killing in Yemen are not guiding, directing Houthi policy. You know, again, the failure of the Bush administration or the Trump administration, understand the difference between the Houthis, the Houthi clan, and the rest of Yemen. It's just ignorance on display.
Looking at, let's assume you and me are totally defending, we want to defend Israel. We want to be on their side.
Yeah.
So why, what is the reason to go in with these sort of attacks? Even on Qatar, let's assume they could kill these people. What could that bring to Israel's position?
Well, nothing, to be honest. Look, we've got 53 years. So I go back to the Munich 1972 Olympics and then the subsequent campaign that Israel launched to exterminate those who carried out that attack. That effort turned out to be both spectacular failure by Israel, because if I say failure because they ended up killing at least one innocent person and didn't actually get to all of the people that they were saying that they're going to track down and kill. Israel has always sort of believed that they can kill their way out of a situation. All we got to do is kill this one person and then things will be great. Well, we killed Soleimani. Well, they did. We killed Hassan Nasrallah. Hey, we killed Hania, the negotiator. They keep killing the people. Others step up into those leadership roles. Some may be more radical than those whom they're replacing, which creates a whole nother set of threats for Israel. Israel would be far better off negotiating an agreement with these people. A genuine negotiation, but Israel's not going to do that. So they're it should be different, but it isn't.
Donald Trump has announced, he tweeted on his social media, he said that if
he truthed.
Exactly. And Truth Social. He mentions that if all NATO countries support him, he's going to go all in with 100% tariffs on Russia together with all these countries. And how do you feel about that? Is he trying to put pressure on Europe? That's why he's doing this? Or he's literally, he wants to do it?
It's, I call it kabuki theater. Hopefully, don't hold your breath waiting for this to happen. You're going to turn blue and die from lack of oxygen. The Europeans just the other day told Trump, you know, you want us to sanction India or tariff India and China? Not going to happen. No way. No, forget it. Go away. So right at that point, Trump can, you know, he can call on them to fly to the moon for all I care. They won't be able to do that either. So this is, you know, Trump's policy on this is crumbling away. He thought he could persuade the Europeans into applying the pressure on India and China, but they recognize that it's going to do more damage to them than it is to the Chinese or the Indians. So they opted not to commit suicide.
Do you feel that the situation is between Russia and Poland is somehow fading away, or we are going to see new escalations?
Oh, we'll probably see more attempts to escalate the situation. Let's understand that what happened this past week was a staged provocation by Ukraine, where they had recovered some Russian drones, taped them back up, got them back up in the air. These were strictly reconnaissance drones, not drones for attack. Then sent them into Ukraine in order to spark more uncertainty and unrest and to, you know, where Ukraine sent him into Poland, and to effort to try to drag Poland and the rest of NATO into this battle against Russia. And Russia's not having any of it. And Russia said, we didn't do that. Let's talk about it. Let's, you know, let's talk. Let's not fight. Let's not have violence. And, you know, when you look at the you know, 400,000, 500,000 Sidewinder missiles were being used to bring down drones that cost maybe $5,000 to make at that. I mean, these were not, you know, big-ass technical drones with capability to deliver heavy armaments. These were reconnaissance drones. And in several cases, you could actually see they'd been taped up with duct tape, you know, 100-mile-an-hour tape. That gives credence to the claim these were actually Russian drones that had come into the hands of Ukrainians, and the Ukrainians were now taking these Russian drones, using them to try to create an incident, like the Reichstag fire, like what the Nazis did in staging the start of World War II.
But these are the signs that we are getting to the end of the conflict in Ukraine. That's why you see some sort of exaggeration on the part of Europeans sending Rafale fighter jets, French fighters, capable of carrying nuclear bombs.
Right, right.
To the Black Sea.
Yeah. Yeah. And, no, I mean, this it is, Ukraine doesn't, again, they don't have an escape route. They're trapped. They need to surrender. Failure to surrender, they're going to die. That's, it's, you know, it's just that simple.
Yeah. Do you feel, Larry, that something could happen before ending the war? Something big would happen in Ukraine or between Russia and other NATO countries in Europe before? Because you remember the last days of World War II against Nazi Germany, the bloodiest days. And are we heading toward the same sort of situation before wrapping up, before putting an end to the conflict in Ukraine?
Yeah, no, I can't rule it out at all. That Ukraine and maybe some in the West and Britain and Germany will opt for some increasingly desperate strategies or tactics. You know, I think the Russians, to their credit, understand that that's likely, and they know that they know what plan that they've got, and they're going to adhere to that plan going forward. So they're not going to get driven off and distracted by some of these, you know, efforts to do exactly that.
Larry, I talked to you on Monday. I know that you're somehow tired, and you're just.
Well, so yeah, we need to talk about that offline. So I'll explain to you.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Great pleasure as always. See you.
All right, my friend. We'll talk.
Yeah.